Welcome to Faye's Knowledge. If you're interested in learning about business, marketing, and personal development, this podcast is just for you. And I say it's just for you because in order to fail, we have to be willing to try. And once you try to do things for yourself, now you're learning and gaining the experience for yourself, which turns into knowledge. So this is the right podcast for you if you're looking for business, marketing, and personal development information, because now you have a chance to learn from others that have been through what you're currently going through or currently having experience, and this is the place for you to grow and develop to help become the best version of yourself. Subscribe to this podcast, and if you really enjoyed towards the end, leave a comment on your biggest takeaway from this specific episode, so that way we can deliver more content, more audio, more videos that can not only help you in your journey but can help propel you. And by propel, I'm actually saying that can help grow and push you forward in your journey. Again, welcome to Failure's Knowledge. Enjoy this episode, and please don't forget to subscribe and wait towards the end and leave a comment about this specific video, your biggest takeaway from this.
I've always been great with numbers. That's why I kind of like getting into the finance industry. Would you consider, you know, sending me some business? You know, you can't fake your way through it. If you don't want to be there, there's the door. I'm pretty strong when it comes to getting out of heat cases. I've been called the AUS King, Automated Underwriting System, and I'll do it 15 or 20 times. I'll get 19 fails, and on the 20th time, I'll get somebody to pass. We have 283 lenders. If you go knock on five builders' doors right now, you'll get a deal. And I was scared to go underneath the 620. I've gotten super comfortable going down to 500 credit, FHA. That equity in the meantime, this distance is growing and growing and growing and growing and growing. And the renter has nothing to show for that.
What does failure is knowledge mean to you?
Failure is knowledge mean to me. You can't learn without failing. You know, walk, crawl, run.
So Stephen, again, I thank you for coming to the Faye's Knowledge Podcast. So I have one question for you. Why? Hello, Family Florida Mortgage Team, powered by Nexa Mortgage. Why that business?
What's the question again? Sorry.
Why did you get started with the business?
Into the business, yes. So I used to be a finance manager at Brandon Ford, and this is going back 5-6 years ago now. And I've always been great with numbers. That's why I kind of like getting into the finance industry. And I did really well there too. When I had my son Isaac is when he's five now, five and a half. And, you know, really started looking at the hours, the nights, the weekends, the holiday weekends were extra. And, you know, I was willing during that time to, this opportunity presented itself to me through a friend of mine that was doing mortgages at the time. And, you know, he said through COVID, he had gotten really busy with lower interest rates and all of that. And so it was a risk, but I thought that the opportunity would be good. Given the reward, I said, you know, I talked it over with my wife. I wouldn't mind taking a pay cut if it allowed more time with the family at that time. And by the grace of God, man, it was actually just the opposite. So I came into that refinance boom and I started doing even better than I was in finance. And that allowed me some time to build up my referral partners, past clientele, get a pipeline going. Because obviously the last couple of years, we've not seen those interest rates. So the refi business has been gone, but the purchase business has still been pretty strong for us.
As I was doing research, you have a lot of background in finances. And it was in, I think, 2014. In addition to that, you had your BA in business management, right?
Correct. Yeah, okay. 2013. Yeah.
2013. Okay. So I'm getting the timeline right.
Yes, sir.
So as I was doing it, I was researching. I was like, wow, he has a lot of history with numbers. And the fact that you're in real estate, you're in the mortgage space, and you have to deal with a lot of numbers.
Yeah.
What's the most difficult thing when it comes to mortgage and helping others become homeowners?
Difficulty-wise, I would say probably for most people, not for myself per se, but for most people, I think it might just be the learning curve and trying to get that education out to the community of how can I purchase a home? You know, I'm a first-time home buyer. I don't have much money to put down. My credit isn't the greatest. Those are usually a couple of the biggest objections that we see. And so I would say difficulty-wise, it's educating those people on how they can get into a home, whether it be today or, you know, 6 months from now or a year from now. It doesn't matter.
When I started my journey a half a decade ago, I started in real estate, but it was in real estate wholesaling.
Okay.
And
if you don't know what you're doing when you're going in, that process of trying to figure out how to close a deal, how to talk to sellers, how to negotiate, how to look at the numbers, it's overwhelming. Yeah. And needless to say, I was in it for like 18 to 24 months. And within 18 months, I only closed one deal. Well, me and my partner only closed one deal. I didn't recognize that you have to have so many different people that you talk to on a daily basis.
Yeah.
If you're only talking to one person, you're going to close one deal. So how did you going from the financial industry to really being a part of the mortgage team, a family Florida mortgage team powered by Nexa Mortgage?
Yeah.
How was that transition for you?
It definitely is not easy. And I think I was really fortunate given the time. So rates were low and the market was strong. I mean, you saw housing prices went through the roof as a result. And so everybody wanted to buy a house back then. Everybody wanted to refinance. I live in Epperson, so we have, you know, now we have about 4,000 residents on our social media page. You could just make a post there and, you know, several people would be hitting you up for a refinance. As of lately, I've been doing a lot more HELOCs because nobody wants to refinance with the higher interest rate, but they still do want to tap into that equity in order to pay off other debts, maybe do some home renovations, build a pool, do other business opportunities, things like that. But over time, it takes time, you know, for you got to ask yourself like this. You were in the real estate industry for a short period of time, but you know, going to a realtor that even a realtor that's a friend of yours and it's like, hey, I'm new to this. I know you probably have been working with somebody that you know and trust for years now, but would you consider, you know, sending me some business? And that's a hard ask, you know. You really, I found that over time I would prove myself and I would earn it. And throughout the years, I've developed what I would say is five basic pillars where I'm able to get all of my business from. I didn't get them all up front or all at one time, but over the years I've developed those five pillars where I can pull most of my business from.
You make it sound easy. You make it sound real easy. I don't know if it's the army in you or I don't know. You make it sound easy, man.
It's not. I think coming in, if you have a strong network, I think you're going to get a great head start on that. You know, people have to know, like, and trust you. So it's not enough to, you know, someone could know you and like you, but if they don't trust you, then they're not going to send you their business, and vice versa. They could trust you, but if they don't know who you are and if they don't like you, then they're not going to send you your business.
I recently was in a digital course and they talked about how people do business with people who know, like, and trust them. Yeah. And I didn't recognize that's for every business. It's not just for your business. No, it's for every business that you're a part of, that you're around. And for you to really build that relationship around, you know, you're coming in new into the industry and you're building the relationship, that network aspect is a lot of things people miss starting off in real estate, in the mortgage space, in the lending space, in the HELOC space.
Yeah.
The networking is what people lack.
Yeah.
How did you know? Well, if you don't know this, somebody knows this, and let me go meet and introduce myself to them.
Yeah. Actually, funny story is the networking was the last of my five pillars, believe it or not. I'm a very straightforward person. I don't sugarcoat. I don't like to lie. I don't like to schmooze. I don't want to go to these events that to me come across fake. And, you know, I buy you a drink and here's my card. You give me your card. And then guess what? We never talk to each other again. It's superficial to me. And it's just not how I like to do business. But through a friend of mine within the past, I would say 18 months, I actually was able to join a really strong BNI group in the area that's very heavily involved, 52 members. I'm the mortgage seat. I had to compete for that seat. There was, I think, five applicants, believe it or not, that I had to compete to get that seat for, and some big names too. But just an active chapter where what I liked about the BNI more than these other, you know, I won't say any names, but more than other networking groups is that, you know, the accountability aspect, that army aspect of it, I should say. It's like, you know, you've got your app here and we all put our numbers in for the week. And this is how much referrals I've sent into the chapter. And this is how many referrals I've received from the chapter. And everybody, there's no overlap. We all do. There's one realtor, one mortgage person, one insurance person, one title company, one plumber, one electrician, and so on and so forth. So we don't infringe on each other. But at the same time, it's like, hey man, you're kind of slacking. What, you haven't really been sending a, you know, so everybody can see each other's numbers. And that's what I like about it. There's no good faith going on, you know. And I don't mean to make this about BNI, but to me, it's been the most real form of networking is the accountability. Everybody can see each other. Everybody holds each other accountable. And so, you know, you can't fake your way through it. If you don't want to be there, there's the door.
BNI, I'm originally from Little Rock, Arkansas. And yeah. I went to a BNI networking event one time and they explained, well, when you're coming in, you're essentially just networking with everybody. If you're in one industry and someone else is in the same industry, it's going to be hard to like network because both of y'all do the same exact thing.
Yeah.
Not knowing that there's a process behind networking. And then when you start to understand, well, you're actually building relationships. You're right. Actually making a difference. You said that was one of your pillars. Could you hit the rest of the four? Or?
Yeah. So networking was the last pillar that I added, and it's been great for my business. So some of the other pillars, I do lead generation, and that would, I'd say, is the most expensive one. And by the way, not one of these pillars can stand by itself. If you're doing one or two, or even, I would say three might get you by, but if you want to be like at the top of your game, you got to be hitting all five. So networking, I said, lead generation. Social media, I started getting really good at in the last couple of years. So the social media, I'm telling you, the business is there. You probably see it a lot, especially for what you do. But people that, you know, I hate to say it, but like the older generation or just people that don't want to give in to the social media, they're going to phase out and they're really missing out because that's definitely, it's probably the cheapest one, you know. You don't realize how many people can hear what you're saying through social media, through just shares and likes and the platform itself. And then the last two I was going to say is going to be your referral partners, which take time to build and trust those relationships. And the last one would be past clientele, which is the most forgotten and probably another cheaper one. So I hit my past clients twice a year. They get a birthday card in the mail, handwritten, and we do a voicemail on their birthday and then the loan anniversary as well. So you can't forget them because they will continue to send you business, whether it be referral or repeat business. And that's probably the most forgotten pillar that people forget. I think those five pillars could apply to any industry. I really do.
So name the five pillars again. It was
networking, social media, lead generation, referral partners, repeat past clients.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so my wife had recently got a new car and we went to the car dealership and went the whole process. And the sales representative, he was like the sales manager, and I actually did a podcast with him. His name was Dave.
Oh, cool.
And he's been in the industry for the last 20 years, and he just started his business, the Red Box Plus Dumpsters.
Oh,
and
yeah.
when I was talking to him, we was talking about the car. I was just sitting there because I'm not about to get a car. I'm just here to support.
Yeah.
He got to talking. And I don't know how we got to that, but he showed me like his database. He showed me like everybody that he's done business with, and he was like, yeah, man, you can come around and look at it. Man, I went around and I looked at it, and he had 3,000 contacts.
Wow.
Since the whole time I've been in the business. He proceeded to say, well, what did he say? He said 44% I'm going to get referrals from. Like, he was in depth with the numbers.
Wow.
He was really in depth with the numbers that he showed me. He was like, yep, that I get referrals from this. I'm like, I was blown away. I'm how do you implement that for your own business?
Yeah.
You're a family guy. Mm-hmm. And you own your own business as well.
Yes, sir.
How do you find a time to really be there for your family?
That's one of the hardest things, man, because being a business owner and you know, doing mortgages, you think that, you know, it's just one hat that you have to wear, and it's not. It's not what people think. You're the receptionist, you're the accountant, you're the marketer, the advertiser, the loan officer, the processor, the
counselor,
everything. You just, yeah, you don't realize how much you have to take on. You're the social media person, you're the networker, you got to do it all. So that's one of the hardest things, but being self-employed really does allow you to have that freedom to be able to write your schedule, work from home when you need to, and make time for your family. And that's definitely important to me.
I read an article that you were recently, I think it said November 3rd, if I'm not mistaken. the one that you put on Instagram, and
Oh.
as I was, oh, you forgot about
The
it.
neighborhood news
Neighborhood,
article.
yep,
Yeah,
that's
they
the
did a good
one.
job. They wrote that. That
They
was
did a
really nice.
phenomenal job. As I was reading it, I was like, wow, he's dedicated, he's committed to his family, and he's gonna do anything to make the customer happy. As
Yeah.
I was reading some of the testimonials, that's what one of them said, that you're willing to do anything, even if it's at midnight. Even if it's at midnight, I was like, that dedication, you have to do everything. You have to find the customers, you got to follow up with them, you got to communicate with them, you got to go through the process with everything. It's easier said than done, but you find a way to make everything happen.
For
How do
sure.
you create a process to follow every single time you're interacting with the customer?
So, one of the hardest things for me is delegating. And I'm a control freak, and I wait too long to scale is my problem. But the problem is nobody works as hard as you do, and nobody cares about your business as much as you do. So you really have to find the right people. And I've found several people throughout the years that I've began to delegate more and more to over time. But yeah, like, in that example, for say, it's like you just have to tell someone, hey, look, I'm putting the kids down right now. I'm gonna get to you in 30 minutes, okay? I promise I'm gonna call you back. And then I got my LOA, I got my virtual assistant doing more cold prospecting stuff. I got my LOA more on the front end, and I have a processor that helps on the back end. So it definitely does allow me to free me up to focus on the relationships and definitely, like, heat cases. I feel like nobody can. I shouldn't say that, but I don't know. I'm pretty strong when it comes to getting out of heat cases. I've been called the AUS King, automated underwriting system. I know how to work it. I know how to tweak the numbers. I'm telling you, man, my son Isaac, he's autistic, and I think he gets some of those tendencies from me because I will sit there. I enjoy doing it. I'll sit at that AUS and I will just keep running it, and I'll tweak decimal points here and there, and I'll change the loan term, and I'll do it 15 or 20 times. I'll get 19 fails, and on the 20th time, I'll get somebody to pass. And that's one of the things I love about this job, man. It's like you go to Wells Fargo and they laugh you out the front door, but you come to me and I'm gonna figure a way how to get it done.
You mentioned something about HELOC earlier. Do you do the same, what you just explained to me with the HELOC, or is it something different?
So the thing with the HELOCs is we have a pretty unique HELOC product. It's a 5-minute underwrite. It's an AI system. It's an artificial intelligence underwriter that asks you a few questions. If the system likes you, then it auto approves. It funds in like a week. So it's a much, much faster process than any bank HELOC. As far as being able to tweak that one, you can't, and I don't focus on them as much because they're usually smaller loan amounts. So, people want to take out 20, 50, sometimes they take out 100 or 200,000, but because of the loan amount size, it's not something that I focus on as much. It is something that we do offer. And then, the refinance as well, it just depends. If someone's at, I try to look at them both. So if someone's got a 2.5% interest rate and they owe $300,000 and they want to take out, say, 100,000, and the interest rates now are, closer to 6%, we'll say, probably doesn't make sense to do the refinance. That's when the HELOC would make sense. But let's say that same person owed $100,000 and they want to take out $100,000, that 2.5, 3% versus that 6% or an 8 to 9% HELOC on the second, well, then the refinance might actually start to make more sense. So in those scenarios, I will run the blended rate calculator to show them, hey, this is what your true interest rate is when you combine the two loans. And sometimes that does make sense for them.
The way you just
Sorry.
explained it, I can tell you love
Yeah,
it.
for sure.
And no, I'm joking, no, I'm serious, but jokingly in the same way. But the reason why I say that is because for you to really understand more about the numbers and what makes sense and what doesn't make sense, you mentioned something about failure. You have to have a lot of setbacks in order for you to say, maybe if I'm doing this wrong, maybe for the second time, let me just try to tweak it again. Why don't you let failure stop you from figuring it out?
Because when someone's house and their future and their family's on the line, and you're the only person that can help them, man, I hate to give up, man. I hate it so much. I will try everything. I really will. I guess it all does boil back down to the family. I mean, you know, you're looking at those kids, you're like, where are you gonna live? You know, where are you gonna stay? So it's definitely important. It's something that I take very seriously, but that would be my answer.
So the Family Florida mortgage team powered by Nexa Mortgage.
Florida family, yeah. It's a mouthful. So the Florida Family Mortgage Team is my branch of Nexa Mortgage. Nexa Mortgage recently rebranded the Nexa Lending, but Nexa Lending, we're the largest mortgage broker in the United States. We have 283 lenders that we can shop around for clients to make sure that we get them the best deal. And then the Florida Family Mortgage Team, that's my branch underneath Nexa Mortgage. We have a physical brick and mortar location right here in Wesley Chapel, Florida. That also opens us up to the state down payment assistance programs because the corporate office is in Phoenix, so they're not open to those.
And the reason why I just brought that up, because I'm glad you just explained it. I was reading some of the reviews. I was doing some research on you now. Just research. And when I saw one that you care for your customers like you care for your family, the brand name or the branch name that you developed, Family Florida mortgage team powered by Nexa Mortgage, is really felt through your presence, through your expertise and how you communicate with people.
Yeah.
Your family is important, and you make other people's families feel more important.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I talk about my why. I don't know if we're there yet or not, but I talk about my why sometimes. And for me growing up, my family was very, very poor. I grew up in a two-bedroom trailer, one bathroom, couldn't have been 700 square feet, you know. And I got a brother, two sisters, my mom, my dad. We had a dog at the time. We lived super tight back then. My dad was a pastor, brought us up in the church. Nothing that he ever did wrong, just we never had any money, you know. And so what I remember growing up would be, you know, going to school and getting made fun of for the clothes that I was wearing or the house that I grew up in. And I remember never getting what I wanted for my birthday, never getting what I wanted for Christmas. And I remember, man, just feeling so helpless at that time because you're a kid, like as a kid, there's nothing you can do. What can you do? I'm just a kid, you know? So when I turned 12, I got a newspaper route and I just started getting more, as I got older, I started getting more and more newspaper routes. And I've been working my whole life since I was 12 years old. Like my biggest fear is looking at my kids and like telling them we got to go back to the trailer park. And then now you get made fun of when you go to school for where you live. That's my wife hates that about me. She hates how much I work, probably. I think she does. But that's my deepest fear, man, is looking at my kids and you know, seeing them get made fun of for the, you know, the house that they grow up in, something they totally can't control. But going back, so I would, you know, getting these newspaper routes, I would start to make a little bit of money. And back then I would just, you know, buy like nicer school clothes or, you know, the dumb Game Boy that I always wanted that I never needed. You know what I mean? But back then it kind of meant something. And I'd help my parents out with the bills a little bit. And as I got older, I just knew that like I didn't want my family to have to live like that or worry about that. So it's something I've always carried with me. It's why I take my job as seriously as I do. And when I look at these other families, when I get them into houses, that's honestly what keeps me going every day, is knowing that their kids won't ever have to feel like that.
Again, I was doing a lot of research.
Yeah.
And when I saw how you was raised and how you came up, I was like, dang, well, I'm from Little Rock, Arkansas. I mean, I was raised by a single mom who raised was by herself. To
Yeah.
be raised by a woman is not bad. Because, you know, a woman does a lot. They can teach you a lot. They can teach you responsibility, manner, what is it called?
Yeah.
Manners, and like just to be a presentable young man.
Yeah.
But for a boy to become a man, a boy has to learn from a man, because there's only so much a woman can teach him.
Yeah.
And when I started to really understand, like, oh, we all have some type of setback. Our why is from our past, and our past is preparing for our future.
Yeah.
And it might seem like a what is called a workaholic, but you're working in your purpose.
Yeah.
For you to find your purpose means that you turn to setback into success.
Yeah.
How do you define success?
Man, I hate to overuse it, but I feel like a lot of my riches are measured in my family, man. When I look around at the blessings that we have and the house that we live in and the vacations that we're able to go on and the times that we're able to spend with each other, to me that's success, you know. Money, all that stuff, you know, it, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. But if it helps you be able to spend more time with your family, that's what really does matter.
And I agree. I
Yeah.
definitely agree. So what we're gonna do now, we're gonna do a surprise segment.
Oh
And
boy.
so what this surprise segment is gonna consist of is say, hypothetically speaking, I'm your mentee now, and you're my mentor. And let's just use the scenario that we did when we first met.
Okay.
And when we
Yeah.
first met, you was driving. I think you was driving here, and then I
Yeah.
ended up seeing you. I read your window, and I called you.
Yes.
And if I was to call you and say, "Hey, Steven, I'm looking to get into the mortgage big business. I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm looking for a mentor. Do you mind mentoring me? How would you go about doing that?"
Yeah, you know, I do get these calls sometimes, and like I said, I'm a straight shooter from the gate. Like I'm gonna tell people this is not like for the faint of heart, you know. And the biggest problem is that so doing mortgages itself is really not that hard once you figure it out. And if there's ever a problem file, I feel like I'm pretty good about coming being able to come to and talking you through how we can get through this. Sometimes it just takes a third set of eyes to bounce an idea off of. It's like there's so many ways to skin a cat in the mortgage industry. It's like, what if you did this instead and try to do it that way? So finding mortgages is the hardest thing. And so you do have to get out of your comfort shell, you know, and I commend you because, you know, as a younger veteran yourself, I mean, you see my truck decal on the back of my truck and, you know, you call me just right then and there on the spot, pull me over on the side of the road. And, you know, I thought that was really awesome, but it's stuff like that makes you uncomfortable, that's going to get you deals. If you go and knock on five builders' doors right now, builders hate their lenders, but they have to use their lender because in order for the client to get their, you know, their incentives, they have to use their preferred lender. But what about those clients that don't qualify, right? With those preferred lenders? We have 283 lenders. If you go knock on five builders' doors right now, you'll get a deal. A lot of people don't want to do that. And so I think a lot of people mistake being a loan officer for being a processor. It's like, oh, you get paid all this money to do the paperwork? No. I get paid all this money to find and originate the loan. You know, I already have a process. I don't even do the paperwork. We have a processor for that, you know. But yeah, if you like it's I said it before, if you have a good network, if you're good in sales, and then you can be a great salesman too, right? And say, you know, go back to the dealership. It's like the dealership spends hundreds of thousands of dollars to get people to come through the front door, and you're at that point shooting fish in a barrel. You know, the price is the price. It's the internet price is already $10,000 off. Like we're below invoice as it is. But now going back, you're the marketer, the advertiser, the networker. Like, you know, so now you're responsible for bringing those clients through the front door. And that's what I would say is probably the hardest thing about what I do. But if you're willing to get a little uncomfortable and put yourself out there, then yeah, you could definitely make a great living doing this.
So give me three steps. So I come to you as a mentee looking to get into the mortgage business. What's the first thing I need to do?
It's So you got to get licensed.
Step one,
Step one. So
get licensed.
20
Okay.
to 20 hours online, 22 hours, 2 hours for the state of Florida. And then there's an in-person exam. It's 125 questions. After that, there's a application background check, fingerprints. And then all of that, I would say total cost around like $700 or $800 probably. Once you're licensed, then you'll want to hang your licensed with a broker, Nexa Lending. I'm probably biased, but they pay the bet. We have more lenders than anybody, you know. So nobody could beat our rates because we have more lenders to shop around than they do. Somebody might be able to get close or match if they have the same, you know, some of the same lenders that we do. But the products too, you know, there's not a mortgage we can't do. Foreign national, ITIN, No income, no FICO, low FICO. I go down to 500 credit all the time. You think about that. I've gotten probably 5 or 10 people in houses this year with credit scores under 550. That's, to me, it's super impressive. Going back to the question, so step one, you got to get
Get licensed.
licensed.
Step
Yeah.
two,
Hang your license with a
with the
broker. And then
board.
step three, you got to start finding some business. So
Okay.
there's so many different ways to do it. But yeah, it could
What's the
definitely.
easiest way? Easiest way.
I mean, the five pillars, you can't just do one of them. I'm telling you, go on your social media. You want to be annoying. You almost want to be annoying. You don't want to be annoying, but you have to do it. You go on your social media. I drop my business cards all over town. I check out at the register and leave a couple cards there. You know what? You never know who's going to pick that up. You saw the truck decal on the back of my truck. You know what I mean? And I get phone calls from that. The lead gen, the networking, the referral partners, and then the past clients that will come over time. And you got to earn those, but don't be afraid to knock on someone's door and, just ask the builder, can I help you out? You got any deals have fallen through in the last month? Let me take a look at them.
And that was the surprise segment, just to show your expertise. Like, hey, since if someone come to me new, these are the three steps you can follow. And first, you get licensed, then hang your license underneath the mortgage, and then go out and look for business. You mentioned about the dealership. You mentioned about the dealership and how they spending $100,000 or hundreds of thousands of dollars to get customers in. And being and having your own business, you mentioned earlier about you got to be your own marketer, you got to be your own salesman, you got to be your own content creator, you got to be your own finance manager, you got to be your own leadership, you got to be your own so many different things. But the value of a customer, I never recognized how important it is to get somebody in the door based off what you're saying, what you're doing, how much you're putting out, how much they're coming in. Give you a prime example. Today I did a webinar before this, a podcast webinar. And it was two people on there. I was like, oh, it's working. The first time I did it, it was one. But the customers are so valuable. Even if it's a lower number, I was like, oh, it's working now. How do you teach someone the importance of respecting what the customer brings?
As far as how do you teach like a salesman or a loan officer coming on, like the value
Yes.
of that client?
Yes.
Oh man. I guess you could show them a P&L. There's a lot of expenses. There's a lot of overhead to doing what I do that people don't realize. And so it's like, oh, you make $6,000 on that deal. It's like, yeah, but it cost me like $4,000 to do that deal, or 3,000 or whatever the case may be. But yeah, you look at your assistants, you look at your office rent, you look at your lead generation ad spend. Ooh, man. And there's a lot of other things. If you ever been to one of my closings, man, I bring a super nice closing gift. My clients, they get the Rays tickets. I'm a season ticket. This will be my fourth season now for the Tampa Bay Rays, so they love that, and that's a great thing for the family too, man. The baseball game, it's just a pastime that America's not quite forgotten about. But yeah, all that stuff, it's just show them a P&L, I guess.
I started, so I'm in school for business management as well. And so,
Oh,
like you,
cool. I didn't know that.
I mean, I go to Kaiser University. And
Nice.
so the different classes, so wait, first off, Kaiser University is one class per month. And I love that. Every month there's a new class, every month there's a new teaching that you're going through. And so when I went to Kaiser, I started learning about profit and loss, finances. And there was a professor there who had his own hotel. And he showed us the profit and loss statement. He was like, well, this is a profit and loss statement, and this is how much we're making, this is how much the expenses are. The expenses was like that much. The profit was like that much. And I was like, what in the world? For someone who's never, ever seen a profit and loss statement, how would you go about teaching them how to actually understand that?
Yeah, so the top line will show your gross revenue, and then lines 2 through 60 or whatever. We'll show all of your expenses. I forgot the credit reports. Oh my gosh.
The credit reports. Yeah.
Oh gosh. So when I started 5 years ago, it used to cost me $28 to run your credit when I started 5 years ago. Today it's almost 100. And here's the kicker. They still sell your information to everybody and anybody down the street. As soon as I run your credit, your phone starts ringing off the hook. So not only do they charge me 100, now they're selling what they call trigger leads. And I call these predatory lenders, but they're bottom feeders. You know, they're going for the lowest hanging fruit, and they buy these trigger leads for pennies on the dollar. So these Experian, TransUnion, Equifax, they're raking it in. But just going back to the P&L, that's one of the biggest ones, the credit report. And the office rent and the assistant and the lead generation spending and the CRM and the Tampa Bay Rays tickets and then the closing gift and all that stuff comes out to the bottom, and that's your net. So that's your net profit at the bottom. That's what you take home before you pay your car, before you pay your, I guess you could write the car off on the business, but your house and everything else.
You also mentioned, because I read as well, the FICO, I'm glad you brought it up. You help people who has a 500 credit score, FICO, get into homes as well. When I saw that, you're really committed. You're really, but now talking to you is like, oh, you're committed because you know how to maneuver, play with the numbers, you know. Yeah. And when you first got your first person who had a 500 credit score in the home, what did that mean to you?
Man, that to me it was eye opening, because my first 2 years in this business, like, you know, I was actually working for a local broker prior to Nexa, and I was there for not quite 2 years, a year and a half, maybe 20 months, something around there, and I was scared to go underneath the 620, and they didn't have as many lenders either too. They didn't have 283 lenders, but I was really scared to go under a 620 because There's several thresholds in mortgages, and when you get under 620, there's more things that can go wrong. And when I say 620, I'm talking about the credit score. And so that first 18 months to 2 years, I was super nervous to go under, you know, a 620 credit score, just from being new and not knowing what to do. And then I slowly dabbled my feet in the water, I got more comfortable going down to 580 as the next threshold. So 580 and 620. And this year, I mean, I would say the past year, even 2 years, I've gotten super comfortable going down to 500 credit. FHA, I know how to get the system to like someone. I know how to tweak the numbers. I've been called the AUS king by other loan officers in the industry just because, you know, I'll help them out. And it's like, hey, try this, change that, shorten the term, get the ratio under here, get the front end under, get the back end under there, and then change the term. Try that. Let me know if it passes. Add a month reserve. Done. All right, Steven, you're the man. Like, you know, but you don't want to do a manual underwrite because the guidelines are going to be way too strict. If you're getting a manual underwrite referred, it's because of something on the credit or because of a front end error, back end, or just the term or the reserves. It's the system's telling you that they don't like this customer for some reason. So you have to figure out how to get the system to like this customer. And that just comes with time and experience. But yeah, for a new loan officer, I help people all the time with that.
And you mentioned a lot of failure, yeah. But you didn't say failure. You had to learn along the process with the experience, time, effort. But people think it's easy to do what you're doing because how you just broke that down, I can tell you've done it so many different times. But for someone that's coming out as new, it's like, well, how do you figure out how to play with the numbers to... People don't see your failures.
Yeah.
They see your success today. And then when you get around them and explain what you're doing, they're like blown away. Yeah. But they don't see the work that you've been putting in.
Yeah.
Why is it important for you to put in the work when there's no one around you?
You know, that's like the definition of integrity right there. It's like doing the right thing when no one's looking, you know. It'd be so easy to just call this client back, hey man, you don't qualify, I'm sorry, you know, let's try again in a year from now. Or you could put in a little bit of extra work and over time, as you get better at doing it, you can figure out real quick if if this is a buyer, you know, or if this is a buyer in the next 3 months or 6 months or a year. And as you get better, I mean, you just get quicker at making these determinations. But I'm telling you, there's not a lot of people that will, you know, venture under that 580 credit score. And it's like I said, it's not easy. It really isn't. If it was easy, I feel like everyone would do it. But it's an underserved market. It's definitely a market I love serving. Doing the right thing when no one's looking, to answer your question is important, because at the end of the day, tying it back in, you are helping those families that otherwise they're just going to be renting for the rest of their life. Without you, they're never going to be a homeowner.
I don't know what I saw, but you broke it down. You said, if a homeowner is renting a home for the next 5-10 years, they're paying $10,000. But whereas if they are owning the home, they get $100,000 within 5 years, 5 or 10 years, I think is what it said.
Yes. So the average, I remember that was in the new neighborhood news article. The average net worth of a homeowner is greater than 10 times that of a renter. And over time, two things are happening when you buy a house. It's almost like this. It's like you make your mortgage payment, you just threw another $750 in the bank. And it's like a bank that you can't even touch right now. You know what I mean? So you just keep doing that and you keep doing that. And so as time goes on, the home is appreciating at, say, 4% a year, 3-5% on average. And while that's happening, you're paying down the principal balance. So principal balance is going this way, home value is going this way. All good. And that equity in the meantime, this distance is growing and growing and growing and growing and growing. And the renter has nothing to show for that. So in 5 years time, I think was the stat. I said, you know, average homeowner, $300,000-$400,000 house is going to be looking at like $100,000 in equity. And the average, and the renters still going to have less than 10,000 in their bank account.
And I can test for that. I was 21 because I'm married for my second time. And so, my first marriage, I was looking at the numbers. I was like, okay, well, if we rent, cause we was in California, if we rent, the rent is like $1,800 to $2,100. Right. Mm. Okay. How much is it to own your home? It's the same price.
Yeah.
Why? It's actually a little bit cheaper. A little bit.
Yeah.
But then, like, we was there for 2 years. Mind you, was in California.
Yeah.
2 years, our equity went up to 100K.
Wow. 2 years.
That was during COVID as well. During COVID.
And yep. That was a VA loan, I take
that was
it.
Yep.
So you put no money down.
No money down.
And you had $100,000 in 2 years. Or you could have rented.
And had nothing.
Right.
And had nothing. So to attest to what you're saying, that's actually true, because you're not just waiting for the equity. You're paying down. And like I like the demonstration that you did. Hold on. I don't know how you did it, but.
Yeah.
Whatever you did, you know. Yeah.
Well, think about it like this, right? So you have a house and now you want to buy an investment property, all right? And you put your 20% down, you buy an investment property, your mortgage is $2,000 a month. You're not going to rent it for $2,000 a month. You know what I mean? That you're just breaking even, right? So it makes sense that renting would cost more than buying, because the landlord wants to make a profit, you know, even a cash flow profit. There could be arguments to be made about appreciation, and those are great arguments, but the chances are that your landlord is paying less on their mortgage than whatever you're paying them for rent. That's what the chances are.
Knowing that, I understand the difference between the two. So if it's 2,000, you're probably paying 22 as the renter, or 23, whatnot, and you're paying their mortgage down. Whereas if you're paying your mortgage down, it's like, well, now you're storing your own savings account. You're storing your own future investment. And I like how you explained that, because a lot of people don't understand the difference between the two. Well, renting is easy. Well, you don't have to take care of everything. Before me and my wife moved out here, we were staying at an apartment complex. Like whenever something broke or something needed to be replaced, we go out and say, hey, you know, something just broke. Can y'all replace that? Whereas when you own your own home, it's more ownership. You have to be the one to take care of everything. But I like how you are there to guide them through the process.
For sure. And Renting, I would say the only time it really makes sense is if you're planning on you don't know where you're gonna be. You're like, Steve, I'm here. My job's got me here for the next like 18 months. You know, yeah, it's gonna make sense to rent for that person. But if you know you love the area, this is where you want to raise your family, it's a no-brainer. You're gonna want to buy a house.
And okay, so what was your biggest, so when you were starting off and you had a couple of deals fall through, they didn't go through, when you saw that and you noticed that, what change did you make? Okay, this deal didn't go through because of that. For next time, let me try this and do that so that way the deal can go through. What is one thing, what did I just
Yeah.
ask you?
I tell you what, it hasn't happened a lot. I won't say it's never happened. There's just more precautions that you have to take into place. And I would say the biggest problem is that people aren't 100% on their application. They'll put stuff down that either doesn't apply or is just flat out not true. I had one, this is going back years, and the client didn't list that they had a side hustle going on their tax return. They when I brought it to their attention, they were like, "Oh yeah, no, that ain't nothing now. That's just something I do on the side, you know." Well, this got a $10,000 loss for last year.
What?
You know,
That's
well,
crazy.
guess what? That goes against your W-2 income. So, you know, that one was a problem. But just being more precautionary, getting more documents up front. I've tried to get to a point to where, you know, realtors, they see my pre-approval now and they're like, they're already cashing the check, you know, because it's as good as gold.
And it goes back to your one of your five pillars.
Yeah.
Wait, that was the referral. Was it the referral?
Referral partner. Yeah. Yeah. This would be more for the list agent. So the buyer's agent would be my referral partner, but when the list agent sees my pre-approval, they can take it to the bank.
And this from your experience, from your failures, from your growth, from your setbacks, and how
Yeah.
you really position to play with the numbers. You just say you failed 19 times, and then maybe the 20th time is how you find the adjustment, like, oh wait, this is the piece. And then we give it to them like, well, Steven, I already put the work in, and why we need to do
Right.
it?
Yeah.
You got it. So with oh, I just looked down. I saw a post that you posted about Dave Ramsey and how the 50-year mortgage. How do you think that's going to affect new homeowners?
You do good research, man. I gotta commend you.
Appreciate it. I appreciate
I'm a numbers guy, man.
it.
I'm a straight shooter. I don't like it. You know, you're gonna get people that want to take advantage. You're gonna get loan officers that are gonna feed on that. I suppose I don't like it. I don't like it. I've done the math. So a 15-year to a 30-year mortgage is a difference of about a half a point. Sometimes it's even a little bit more than that. So you have to assume that going from a 30-year mortgage to a 50-year mortgage is going to be at least that half a point difference. And when you do the math, I plugged in a $400,000 house, one at 6% and one at 6% on a 30-year and 6.5 on a 50-year. Client saves $100 a month on that mortgage for an extra 20 years of their life. And the argument's good, well, they're never gonna have the mortgage
What?
for 50 years. No, but the break-even point, that's the problem. The point at which they can sell and not be upside down is much greater. That's what I don't like about it. Homeownership should be about building wealth. Yeah, you wanna have a fortress for your family. Yeah, you wanna have a place to call home. But it should be about building wealth. The predatory stuff, man, the temporary buydowns, the balloons, I don't like them. I don't like any of that hocus pocus. I'm not for the fog, man. I'm just a straight shooter. I will tell you how it is. Even the down payment assistance, I tell people, hey, this is non-forgivable and it comes at a higher rate. I let them know up front, you know.
So you're a straight shooter. What was your job in the Army?
Technical engineer, land surveyor.
Technical in, so you did a lot of data information.
Data, yeah, tying back into the math, I enjoyed
Now
doing
that makes
a
sense.
lot
Now that makes sense. I did when I was in the Marine Corps, I did Motor T, motor transportation, drive the military
that.
vehicles.
Okay.
And what I'm doing today is completely different than what I was doing in the service.
For sure.
From when you was in the army and you was about to get out and you was like, okay, I'm about to transition from being in the service, now I gotta be out, now I'm about to become a veteran and start my own business and continue the family model. How was the transition process through everything?
Yeah, I got out right after deployment. I got back from Bagram Airfield, Afghanistan, went there from 2013 to 2014, and then my military obligation was just about up. At the time, I didn't go straight into mortgages. I wasn't quite sure what I still wanted to do. I know I had asked my uncle, and I'd asked a few people around, and he said, "Look, you should just get into car sales right now, and you'll do really good. You're gonna want to, just go in there eager and hungry, and tell them you're willing to learn and do what you have to do, to sell as many cars as possible, you know." And so I went into it with that mindset, and I quickly started doing really good. I got promoted into finance, and I really liked being in finance because I got back to the numbers and helping people out get approved. But I knew that wasn't it, and then the mortgages presented itself, and really it wasn't for the money. Like I told you, I was expecting to take a pay cut, and for me, to spend more time with my family, I was willing to do that. But it just, by the grace of God, man, always looking out was turned out to be the opposite. So it's been great. I've loved every minute of it. I really enjoy doing this. And I'd say the most gratification you get is at that closing table, man. People are so over the moon happy. It's a really cool thing to see.
I would say I agree, but I only closed one wholesale deal, so I don't know. That explains why somebody called you the All-American Family Man.
Oh, it was that in the, I don't know if that was in the article. I'd have to go back and
No, it
read it.
wasn't in an article.
It
It
was a
was in a
review, maybe.
review.
Okay.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
It was a review. Somebody called you the All-American Family Man.
Oh man, people are too kind.
So did hold on, let me see. Hold on. You grew up poor, and now that you talked about that, I'm glad you brought that up as well. So, oh, this is a random note. So you post a lot of I saw that you post a lot on social media. But I didn't really understand what you did though. Why is that?
What I did
Like
is
what you do now? I see like clips of your family. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. It makes sense. It's like hints of what you do. It's hints. You're very, very creative with that.
yeah. So my business page, I definitely try to sprinkle in a lot of family in there, but I tell you what, it's not social media. Like if I could live my life without social media, I totally would. It's one of those things that you have to do as a business owner. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. So, I mean, I have fun with it. I post my kids, I post us, our family, my wife doing, fun things. And I do that just to stay relevant, just to stay at the top of people's feeds. And of course I do the business post too. And I've gotten really good with the videos. I like the little gifts that pop up on the video. It's like, whatever, I don't know. Just grabbing people's attention. But yeah, it's one of those necessary evils. That's what I'll call it. Yeah. 'Cause it's if I could go without it, I totally would.
I agree. It's definitely a lot. So I have one more segment, and it's called the Best for Last segment. And I'm going to ask you four questions, and you answer it within 30 seconds.
Okay.
So question number one, what are you grateful for?
And I'm grateful for my family. I'm grateful for my job. I'm just grateful for, Jesus, just everything, man, that he's given us. So many blessings, too many to count. Our house, our vehicles, good health. I try to live from a place of gratitude. I try to posture my heart from a place of gratitude, and I think that's the best way to live. If you could wake up in the morning before you even touch your phone and just say three things that you're thankful for, I think a lot of your life will change.
I agree. I actually, every time I wake up, every day I wake up, I give thanks. And then what I recently start back doing is saying like a thank you prayer and like before the day starts. So that I get it now. I get it. Second
Yeah.
question, do you have any regrets?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. I mean, I got out of the army. I'm glad I did. At the time I did. I didn't want to do the 20 years. You can relate to that.
It's brutal.
I don't know. I've made mistakes. Listen, nobody's perfect. I've made mistakes. I'm sure there's things I wish I could go back and undo. But I try to live my life in a way now that, that, you know, I won't have any regrets moving forward.
Okay. Question number three. While having your own business with the Family Florida Mortgage Team, powered by Nexus Mortgage, what is your biggest takeaway from that?
I'm so sorry. You're going to have to chop this part. Can you repeat the question?
Yes, question number three.
Okay.
So while working at, Family Florida Mortgage Team, powered by Nexus Mortgage, what is your biggest takeaway while having this company?
My biggest takeaway, I just look at all the families we've helped and all the people we've gotten into homes. I don't know. I feel like a lot of people in the community know me just through that. And that's my biggest takeaway is truly helping people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then last question, what does failure is knowledge mean to you?
Failure is knowledge mean to me. You can't learn without failing. You know, walk, crawl, run. Same as the army. It's you're gonna mess up, and you can't be afraid to mess up. And most of the time, I will say, we could fix it. You know, usually it requires just a different set of eyes. You know, you can get a third set of eyes in there to figure out a different way to get how can we get this past underwriting. You know, I think people look at me and they think some people look at me and they think I'm the underwriter, right? And so I gotta slow them down for a second. It's like, hey, do you like hockey or you like soccer? Okay, you like hockey. All right, I'm not the goalie. I'm the guy with the puck. And I need to get the puck. And you're, by the way, you're the puck. I need to get the puck past the goalie. So, knowledge is failure. Failure is knowledge. It's a strong name, man, because there's a lot of truth to it. And you're going to fail. And the key thing is to learn from your failures. If you don't learn from your failures, then that value's lost. But you just make sure that you don't make that mistake twice, you know?
That's powerful. Okay, yeah. So how can people find you? How can I learn more about the Family Florida Mortgage Team powered by Nexus Mortgage? How can they learn more about you?
Yeah, so our website, floridafamilymortgageteam.com. Instagram is stephen.oliver.mlo. And then Facebook would be Stephen Oliver, branch manager, I think. And then it's got my NMLS number 202819. That's a long one. But if you just Google, you know, Florida Family Mortgage, you could Google Nexa Mortgage. We have more 5-star reviews than anybody in Florida for Nexa. We're up over 130 now. So we'll usually be the first person that comes up for Nexa.
Gotcha. Steven, man, this was incredible. So I'm about to stop recording. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, man. Thanks, Trell.
Again, Steven, I appreciate you for coming on the Phase Knowledge Podcast. What was your biggest takeaway while being on the podcast?
My biggest takeaway, Terrell, you're a great man. You're young, you're hungry, and I can see that. And failure is knowledge. I love the company. I love the idea. You know, you pull me over on the side of the road. You're like I said, you've got that drive in you. I can see it. And you do your research, man. I mean, the amount of information and questions that you brought and all the research you did on me, I was super impressed. It definitely made everything just go really smooth. It made the conversation really natural, and I really appreciate you, brother. Thank you.
For the person who's coming on next, what is one piece of advice that you can offer them?
Just be authentic. Be yourself. I'm a straight shooter. I think people can see right through it when you're being fake, you know? And so it really doesn't matter what you do for a living. Be yourself. Be someone that people are either going to like you or they're not going to like you, but be yourself, and those people are going to want to work with you. And if they do, it's because they're like-minded people.
I agree. And last question. What is one thing that can potentially improve on for the next guest?
Man, you did a great job. You brought all this super nice equipment. I didn't even have to go anywhere. You came to my office. I don't know if I have any suggestions for you. You brought water. It's been great, man, honestly. I don't have any you did a great job. I
I
don't have any
appreciate it.
suggestions. Yeah.